Greetings, this is James Gilliland, broadcasting live from the East Seti Ranch, from a remote place deep under the ground where nobody knows. And we've got a great show. We've got a lot of things I need to, I've been handled a few papers here that I need to talk about, which I never do. And we've got the Science, Spirit, and World Transformation Conference, July 2nd through 5th. And this is a big one, folks. You don't want to miss this one. We've got William Henry, Shelley Yates with Fire the Grid. We've got Lisa Renee, Brooks Agnew, who's taking the trip to the inner earth, getting a Russian icebreaker. That's going to be an amazing trip. We've got Dolores Cannon, Mary Rodwell, Michal Ledwith, John Kelly, Nahi, and myself, as well as Paula Harris. So this is just an amazing lineup for this conference, and this may be our last one due to upcoming shifts and changes, and we're getting a lot of heat from outside forces right now, so we'll see what happens. But anyway, don't miss that conference. We've also got the self-mastery workshops coming up. We've got a very big one April 23rd through the 25th, and that's limited seating for that one. We're doing smaller groups, and the energy is much more power-packed. So we've got Self-Mastery 2, May 14th through 16th, and then the Ambassador Training, May 21st through 23rd, and the Teacher's Training is May 28th through the 30th. So check out the website, go to eseti.org. All that information is on there. If you want to check out these classes, they're just amazing. They're a quantum leap in consciousness. We also have the eseti Camp for Kids, it's going to be real fun, and that's coming up June 12th and July 24th. So, again, these are all on the website. And we have a little bit of an outreach program here going on. We've got Suntuck and Pam, which are taking Kunlun and Qigong classes out into the other states, you might say. And they have a class in Vancouver, and that's April 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. And then they have one in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. That's April 9th through the 11th. They have one in Montreal, Quebec. That's 16th, 17th, and 18th of April. And in Nova Scotia, they have one the 23rd, 24th, and 25th. And so it looks like they have Lincoln in Vermont, May 7th, 8th, and 9th. And in Santa Cruz, California, June 4th, 5th, and 6th. So they also have ongoing weekly classes here at the ranch, 7 to 9. And, you know, that's up here at the ranch. If you want to come up here and experience Kunlun, it's great. But there's just a lot of things going on. I think I've covered everything, hopefully. But without any further ado, I want to get our guest on. We've got a great guest tonight. We've got Patty Greer joining us, and she was an accomplished singer, songwriter, pianist, harpist, had an injury to her hands, and forced to retire and refocus her energy. She ventured off to Europe and then started getting involved in crop circles and 2012 and fairies and all kinds of awesome things. So without any further ado, I'd like to welcome Patty to the show. Patty, are you with us?
I'm here. Good evening.
Oh, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
You know, there's several things I wanted to cover tonight. I know you've got quite a few films out. Now, you've got the Crop Circle film. Did you want to talk a little bit about that first?
I would love to. My newest movie, which I just finished probably a month ago, is called Crop Circles, 2010 Update, The Wake-Up Call. Mm-hmm. And it is, I'd say, the best of the formations from the 1980s up until this last summer, looking at the evolution of the formations. And I interviewed the people that are really the true crappies, in my opinion, the people that I met day after day in the fields. And it's people that are having experiences with balls of light, people that are really taking the time to sit on the hillsides. And, you know, there's all kinds of people that you'll meet over in the crop circles. Like you're saying, there's all kinds of infiltration in all the meetings anymore. The people that I interview, you know, the nice thing about being a filmmaker is you can decide who makes it in the cut. Mm-hmm. And I have a real commitment to bringing information that I think is inspiring rather than fear-based.
Good.
So, yeah, my new movie, I just world premiered it at the International UFO Conference in Laughlin, Nevada. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, probably one of the best conferences in the world because 600 or 800 researchers get together in the middle of the desert. I mean, there is nowhere to go. We are in one resort for 10 days, and it is 14 hours a day, nonstop information. So I show my movies there every year, and my new movie, The Crop Circle Movie, just took Best Feature Film at this event and Best Music, which was really a treat. Last year, my 2012 movie won Best Feature Film also.
Great.
And I'm a newbie in the group, so I don't know how it's happening.
Yeah, well, obviously it's being directed from another level, you know.
I believe so.
Now, you talked about the balls of... Could you go further into that and the balls of light? Because this is really interesting. I'd love to get into that a little deeper.
Well, the reason that I made this movie was actually about the balls of light footage that was taken by John Whaley. Have you seen the 1996 footage of the two balls of light that lay a crop circle in a matter of seconds before your eyes? Have you personally seen it?
Yes, I have. And you know, not trying to toot my own horn, but in the very beginning when the crop circles were laid out, I said the ETs are doing it. And they send down a probe, which is a ball of light, and the circle is in the ball of light, and it's programmed into the ball of light. And they have, you know, I went further into it, and I got pretty much screamed off the stage for talking about that the ships were doing them, the ultra-dimensional, the much higher beings were doing these. And when that film came out, I was kind of exonerated on that one.
Right. Well, you know, there's a lot of different perceptions on how it's happening, but the famous footage, the John Whaley footage, I think is phenomenal. And half the world says, oh my gosh, we're actually seeing a crop circle go down, and the other people are, you know, debunking it, and they're just all empowered thinking, you know, this is Photoshop, which we know we didn't have in the 90s. So, I mean, at the time that this footage was taken, we weren't doing those kind of changes in the shots. So, I brought the footage home. I got permission to use it, and it ended my very first movie. And as I'm looking at it for no reason other than I'm working with the ETs, I believe, I said to my editor, reverse the film, slow it down. I just have a feeling. He said, how slow? I said, I don't know, 30%. Now, I don't know where that came from, but he slowed it down 30%, ran it backwards, and there on the John Whaley footage, I found, right before the field goes down, a line of communication between the balls of light right on the footage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's phenomenal. Everybody's looked at this footage. The newbie comes in, for some reason reversed it, slowed it down, and I've got this amazing stop in the John Whaley footage where you can see a visible line of communication between those two balls of light. So that begins this new movie. I was so excited by it. And when I first discovered it, I was just such a new filmmaker. I stuck it at the end of my hour and a half long first movie. And I think most people missed it. Even people that know about crop circles totally missed the discovery because I stuck it at the end. So the new movie, basically I opened the movie with looking at the balls of light because you don't need to build up. This is happening. This is how it's going down. And so pretty much I opened and closed the movie with this discovery, which to me is pretty undebunkable. Now, I love it that you said that you realized that these balls of light are, I consider them satellites off the mothership.
Mm-hmm.
And I do agree with you. That's very interesting that you said that you felt that the balls of light were programmed with the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard quite that one. I have lots of different interpretations in all my movies about how crop circles are made. And I think it's good to give people many options of ways to look at how physically it's happening. You know, we know what we're seeing is a microwave effect. Some kind of really intense heat is hitting the wheat or the corn and having an instant effect, which are these bubbles, and then it bends over at 90 degrees, which we call the bent nodes.
Mm-hmm.
We're also seeing little curly stems on the sides of the wheat, the somewhat of a leaf, you would think, you know, it's not even a leaf, it's like those straight, stiff things, but they're curling as if being hit by really intense heat. They don't burn, they just curl. So whatever's doing it knows how to work with wheat, knows how to work with the grains, and knows the limitation of what's too much. But there was a porcupine found that was in, you know, the wheat when the crop circle was made, and this thing was squished flat and all the moisture was gone. So we don't want to be in the crop circles when the fields are going down.
No, did it spin its quills too, or?
I didn't hear anything about the quills. I just heard it was flat and missing all its moisture, and definitely it had been baked quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, some pretty intense energy. It's amazing when you think about it. It's some kind of a, you know, it's almost like the same thing when you see a tornado or something. You see a straw going through a steel beam or a telephone pole or something of that nature, that the laws of physics that we know change, you know, when these crop circles are laid down, because, you know, as we know it, you know, those should all break. You know, they should be snapping and breaking, and they're not. You know, they're actually
right.
Altered somehow and woven, you know, by these.
Well, the most amazing of the crops to go down is the early April and May canola fields.
Mm-hmm.
Now, canola is hollow. It's about an inch. Sometimes, you know, the stem can be an inch, but these are hollow tubes, and anybody stepping on or pushing down a canola stem, you'll break it. It's so brittle.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got acres of canola, and it's not bent at a 90 degree, but the whole stem, which are these big, stiff things, the whole stem from like 6 inches off the ground are bending simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
This, I think, is one of the most phenomenal crops of all to be laid, because they're extremely brittle and hollow. I mean, this is a miracle.
What do you think about Doug and Dave?
Well, you know, one of them has been dead for over 12 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, yep. The people that are still saying, oh, aren't they being made by Doug and Dave, are not really quite awake. But, you know, it surprises me to meet so many intelligent, advanced-minded people that actually will say, wasn't it just a couple of guys 10 or 15 years ago? And it's like, mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the rumor, but there's still almost 1 to 2 to 3 crop circles every single day during the months of summer in England going down.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a particular area that I go to every summer, which is called Wiltshire, England. You've got Stonehenge to the east, and you've got Glastonbury to the west, and right in the middle is the Avebury Stone Circle. And
mm-hmm.
The Avebury Stone Circle seems to be the center of the greatest crop circles in the world. And it's sitting in the middle of a 10-square-mile radius of 90% of the crop circles on the planet that are being documented. Now, when I say that are being documented, this could be one of the biggest pieces of why we think England has more crop circles than anywhere. It's very possible that there could be massive amounts of crop circles happening in, for instance, Peru or in
mm-hmm.
the Maya lands, and nobody's flying little planes. Nobody's looking for them. And, you know, if they're not being documented, a lot of times it's because there's nobody looking. So chances are when we see that we have 150 crop circles last year or 170 the year before, these are the numbers that are pretty much in range. These are just the ones that have been reported. I know personally I reported a crop circle a few years ago that didn't make it in the book. Well, that thing made every hair on my body stand up. I know it was a real crop circle.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we have all these ones that aren't being documented, then you know if there's 150 that are known, there's probably 1,000 that aren't.
Yeah, there
are
thousands
in the States. Of them.
I know they've happened in the States. We had one here in Chehalis not too far from us, and then one of the local farmers here had a crop circle, and he freaked out and he mowed it down the next day. And
he,
you know, thought it was the work of the devil, and you know, they're happening all over the world, and to me, to think that Doug and Dave would be, you know, I want their frequent flyer miles, you know, if it's Doug
exactly.
and Dave, because they've been in Australia, they've been all over the world, and I'm wondering who's sponsoring their plane tickets for them to be getting out there. But again, you know, the science behind it just totally refutes all that. It's impossible to do with a board and a chain what's being done in. You know, and the timing. I mean, these things are just laid down immediately. It's not something that it takes, you know, a week and a team of surveyors to lay out to get those perfect geometric patterns.
Well, you're also laying out those geometric patterns in undulating fields. Now, how do you go up and down these curves and get a perfect circle from the air repeatedly?
Mm-hmm.
You know, these things are masterpieces. You know, not only are they this amazing sacred geometric pattern from the air, but when you're in the field and you're walking through them, each circle, and some of these circles can have 50 to 90 circles within the formation, each circle can have a totally different directional lay. Like one will be clockwise, the next will be counterclockwise, the next will be braided, the next will be woven. And these are just side by side within the same formation, not to mention that in the center of each one, there's typically some kind of amazing centerpiece. I mean, mm-hmm. some of them are artworks. In the new movie, I do a segment just called Amazing Centerpieces of Crop Circles.
Uh-huh.
And one after another, I mean, they are woven and braided and twisted, and some of them actually come up like a bouquet of flowers, and they've taken a few pieces of wheat and almost drawn them and tied them in a knot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how these are happening within seconds is really, really impressive. I do believe that there are three teams, I've been told, three teams in Wiltshire that are going out and making fields in the night. But when mm-hmm. we look at 2.25 acres perfectly laid, it's not physically possible for humans to do this. Not at the level we're seeing.
Yeah, I've heard they've hired people and they've tried to debunk them, and they brought, you know, people out that are calling it a form of art and they're trying to make their own circles. But I mean, they're no way as near as intricate as these large crop circles that, you know, pilots have flown over fields, and they're not there, and then they turn around and fly back and they're there. So they're happening almost instantaneously, like the in your film, you know, with the balls of light flying over and they just lay down and are done. You know, I just don't see how anybody could use logic or reason and come up with an idea of anything other than these are being done by some very, very advanced beings. You know, where these beings come from, that's a different story, but the technology to do such a thing and the messages in these crop circles are so far beyond anything your basic layman would do, or, you know, people of Earth would be doing, and they're very ancient. Some of the symbols they're coming forward with are extremely ancient symbols.
Absolutely. I think one of the most amazing ones was this last summer, 2009, was the formation that came down in three different phases. It began, and it looked like a little coccapella. I don't know if you saw this one. It was in England. It looked like a coccapella, nice little formation. It had some interesting artworks to it. 2 days later, it expanded to about 700 feet, and it had all of a sudden birds coming off it and starting to drop a very interesting-looking new kind of language that nobody could recognize. 1 week later, it was 1,500 feet long, and it happened overnight. So the circle makers are starting to phase the formational information. So when this 1,500-foot formation went down, and I really do a close-up of this in the film, people that have studied languages over the entire history of humanity have said that this is a language that they haven't seen in thousands of years. It mm-hmm. had images of hieroglyphs. It had images of Mayan symbols. It brought together all the ancient languages of different cultures, but this is something that hasn't been seen on the planet for ages. And here it is, 1,500 feet long in a crop circle. So we're getting a lot of information through the crop circles, and I'm personally am starting to look at like trends and groupings of what the circle makers are trying to tell us. In the last summer, again going back to recent 2009, there were three different formations that looked like squid, an octopus, mm-hmm. and fish swimming in a circle was the fourth one. There was another one that looked like a sea creature swimming, but there was a lot of references to the ocean, and we know what's going on in the ocean, but they're really trying to draw our attention to to the fact that this is a place we need to put attention now because we're having serious, serious problems and they're being overlooked. So what happens? Right after the first formation goes down, we have the beaching of all those strange squid in California. Coming up on the beach, those giant squid that were like larger than the size of children that were in the same photo. These big, huge things that people were saying, we've never seen anything like this in the ocean, let alone beaching. And they were all along the California coast for like a week. Mm-hmm. This was right during the course of when these crop circles were showing us these squid, these octopus, which I found pretty amazingly timely. Last summer, last year, the year before, we're getting these horrific beachings of whales. Now, this is something very, it's gone on through history, but it's really building now. And again, we're getting the information through the crop circles to really draw our focus here. Well, now, this last year, we're starting to see dolphins beaching with the whales. This is pretty serious. This is pretty serious. And the information, again, the circle makers are giving us everything we need to know. The problem is humanity's not listening.
And what do you think their message is as far as the, it seems like there's multiple messages going on and kind of a heads up and warning of future events seems to be one of the main themes.
Absolutely. Well, I think the formation that I found most interesting of 2008, when I was in the field, was the one that came down in the Avebury Stone Circle. And people are right near this stone circle. It was an Avebury Manor. And it was this beautiful picture of, like, the orbits around the Earth or around the sun. And it was, I called it the orbits. A lot of people called it Planet X. But this formation got worldwide attention. The very first day I was in it, I flew over it. I got great footage in the field and from the air. The very next day, I had a friend. I said, I want to take you over to the Avebury Formation. It's amazing. So I had a car full of people. I brought him in, and the farmer had decided he didn't want people on his property. So he drove his tractor through the center of this gorgeous formation and blazed down 20-foot swaths of laid crop so that the formation no longer was, shall we say, worth photographing from the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And when you went in the field, you could still feel it. And again, it's about being sensitive. Some people really feel the crop circles. I feel them 30, 40 feet before I even get in it. So other people can just stand in there and go, well, so. again, it's different interpretations. But that particular formation really affected me. So I went in, I saw what the farmer had done, and I was apologizing to my friends because now there are these stacks of cut wheat instead of this flawless formation. Why would the farmer do this, you know? And some of the farmers cut them immediately to keep the people out or to take away the magic or that they feel, like you were saying, that there's some dark force or antichrist. I don't know, I don't think those thoughts. But, yeah, a lot of the farmers are quite taken aback, and they just mow it down and think that that's the end of it. But this particular one was such important information, and a lot of the people that were dissecting and reading the formations were saying, oh, this is the biggest information about Planet X, about the solar flares. They just felt like this was huge. And because I'm generous with photos and things, I don't think that I'm over there because I'm supposed to be selfish and only make my own movie. So I was sharing it with people that were doing pretty important stories about this formation. I went in the next evening by myself at sunset, which was kind of against my rules, but I just couldn't get enough. I went in a back way, which not anybody had walked in. So unfortunately, I was walking through, I don't know, 500 different spider webs. And I always wear jeans and stuff when I'm in the formations, but this particular evening I was coming back from dinner, so I was in a skirt and thongs walking through spiderwebs. By the time I got to the Avebury Manor formation, I looked down at my black skirt and it was almost white. And I had a surprising number of spiders on me, and I'm in a skirt and I'm a girl. This does not work. But for some reason, something about the crop circles, I was surprisingly relaxed. I was it was like ghastly for a moment seeing that crawling on me, and I took my skirt, shook it off, and just took my time in the formation. The photos that I have from the formation that night show a very strange little green lit-up spaceship-looking thing. And other photos that I had like angles of light beams. And I was working with an inexpensive, just a Canon PowerShot camera that summer, but the photos that I took in the crop circles had so many mystifying visuals that, I don't buy into it's light refracting or any of that crap, you know. I mean, a lot of people like to think that there's no magic on the planet, but the photos that I've gotten in the formations, really, you do pick up a lot of the orbs, the balls of light, the rays of light, and this lime green spaceship-looking little thing was really quite stunning in that formation. So here we have the farmer kill the field. You know, people are pretty disappointed because it was an amazing formation. About 3 or 4 or 5 days later, I don't remember when it was, the circle makers came and splattered that farmer's field with so many pictures that it filled the whole field with all these different planetary symbols, information. I mean, the circle readers must have gone to town because this thing was unbelievable. When I saw the picture from the sky, I thought humans did it because it looked kind of sloppy and it didn't look like it made any sense. But then I went in the formation and it was meticulous. It was so stunning that, you know, energetically you can feel when I believe they're real. You know, there is a possibility, one of the old farmers, and I got him on film, and because I love how honest he was, and the circle makers make my movies, for some reason I couldn't read his name to put his name in the credits. So I felt even safer letting him say what he said on film because he's a nameless farmer over there. But I get him out in the field, and I said, what do you think is making the formations? He's in his 80s, he could give a hoot, you know, who's listening. And he said, well, you know, there's a whole lot of military around here, and they have been experimenting with laser exercises from outer space. That's what he thinks is laying down the crop circles. That they're practicing some laser patterning on the planet in the farm field. Heck if I know. I mean, it's just another statement, but it was one I had never heard, and it was from a guy who's owned property in the crop circle area for over 50 years. So, you know,
what I've seen being, you know, in this field for so long is that what happens is there'll be a phenomenal event, and then the event starts to get clouded with all this misinformation surrounding it, and then it goes back to some government insider saying, I have government inside information that this and this and this is happening, and everybody goes, oh, okay. And then it just gets dismissed or buried under so much disinformation and other nonsense. And then pretty soon this phenomenal event just kind of just falls off the radar. And it seems to be an ongoing thing, even with the ufology and everything else I've seen over and over. There'll be an amazing sighting and, you know, just, you know, wait about 2 weeks and pretty soon it'll be buried with so much misinformation that they forget about the original event.
Right. Well, you know, sometimes I wonder if all the conspiracy talk altogether is to keep us distracted from what's going on. You know, all the fear-based information that they're loading into the light workers and the people that are doing this brilliant work and making movies and writing books. You know, all this confusing, you know, stuff that I've been told and that I've listened to, I never talk about it on the radio. And when it comes into my mind on a beautiful day, I'm at 10,000 feet in the Colorado Mountains. It's so beautiful where I live. Yesterday, it was like an Etch-a-Sketch in the sky. And I was trying to not be furious. I mean, it was unbelievable what somebody was doing to the sky in this beautiful mountain town. Just complete chemtrailing. And, you know, how do you not be affected? How do you not wonder, how can this be going on? Again, this isn't where I want to focus, but it certainly starts your day with a slap in the face when you You're doing everything you can to have a healthy life, and then you look up and go, geez, this is really out of my control.
Yeah, I moved up in the mountains to get away from all that stuff, and I just want to live a very wholesome spiritual life. I'm not going to bother anybody. I'm just going to do my own thing. And that's how everything began. And I've found that there's no way of getting away from this. That it's like, no matter where you go, it's in your face. And the same thing here today. We were just appalled at looking up at the sky, and they did about 5 rounds. It seems like one after another, they did one layer and they came back again, and they did another layer and they came back again and did another checkerboard pattern, and X's right over us. And they actually turned around a couple times right over the ranch, to give us a little extra spray. And
yeah.
What's interesting is I have a friend of mine he's a mechanic, and I won't mention his name, and he knows some people at the McCord Air Force Base here, and they're some of the guys that are spraying these chemtrails, and they actually said that there was an ET group up here in the mountains, and that they were actually spraying this area due to all the ET activity. And I said, well, didn't you just question them? Because they were totally surprised we even knew about chemtrails. They think everybody is ignorant and nobody knows what's going on or is paying attention, which unfortunately that might be the case for quite a few people. But, it's not rocket science. To look up and see what's happening in your own skies and watch blue sky go to gray, and then you find out, you're having trouble breathing, you're having intestinal problems and joint pain and muscle pain and everything else that comes across with exposure to the chemicals that they're spraying up there. And, it's a no-brainer. It's so obvious what's going on, and I don't know what the answer to that is other than it maybe just have to get so ugly before people actually do something about it.
Well, this is where I think that we really need the help from the ETs, and
mm-hmm.
I'm glad they're here. I'm glad they're working with us. Excuse me, I've been dealing with pneumonia since the UFO conference. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I have never felt like, we need to reach for something outside ourselves. But when we look at what is really unfortunately causing this is human greed,
mm-hmm.
and human unconsciousness. And that's causing, the banks to fall, everything to fall. We know what's going on now, and it's a worldwide falling of social, economic, energetic, socioeconomic, really. I mean, it's just overall, the masses are no longer respecting the planet and each other. And I personally, last year, had such a year of watching friends and family just completely forget about integrity altogether because people are pretty much getting close to the tipping point in their own personal lives, moving into such fear because the banks stole their money or, whatever is going on. People are really being challenged. But I think that there's something good that's going to come of this, which is to release the tension. All of a sudden, we start to realize, well, I have less money. I'm going to be buying less, throwing less away, wasting less things on the planet, and throwing less into the landfill. As we all have less money, we're going to be doing less of all the destruction that, that's the only good thing about these lessons. But again, when we look at the messages of the circle makers about watching the oceans, we also had messages about all the changes that are happening to the physical planet as far as things that are going on in the sky, the solar flares. We're getting a lot of warnings about the sun activity, that's potentially coming. And this was an interesting conversation I had with Donald Ware at the UFO conference. He seemed to think that the chemtrails are creating this wonderful layer that's going to protect us from solar flares.
Yeah.
And I heard even this last month at the UFO conference that the chemtrails are being prepared so that we don't see Planet X coming through. I mean, I've heard every kind of thing about the purpose of it, but when it comes down to it, it just reminds me to enjoy every day that much more.
Yeah, I've had my conversations with Donald Ware, and they weren't real positive. And it's probably one of the reasons why I'm not speaking at the International UFO Congress anymore, because I kind of called it like it was. And I have a habit of doing that, and he was talking about how these wonderful men are up there risking their lives to spray us with these deadly toxins and chemicals, and what a good thing it is. And I said, well, why don't you just drink a cup of that, you know? whatever they're spraying, just pour it into a cup and drink it.
I think that their friends and family ought to have a cocktail along with them. I agree.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, again, though, we don't want to put our focus on it. You know, all this conspiracy information. I know for me, I'm in a new relationship. And I've got this really well-read man, and a couple days ago when it was really, really bad where we are, I pointed up to the sky and I was like, oh God, you know, I just don't even want to wreck his brain. I don't want to introduce people to what's going on, because it kind of destroys a lot of our positive nature when we realize that we've got some serious enemies that are doing some really bad things right now. But on the other hand, if we can make ourselves aware and not be a squeaky wheel, but do something to move in a direction of how can we help, you know? How can we energetically help the planet right now to be overall more conscious? So last year my movie was called 2012, We're Already In It, and this is the one that was Best Feature Film at the UFO Conference last year. What I did was I interviewed a pile of brilliant people in the crop circles and at the Glastonbury Symposium. And these are people that come in from all over the world to be in the crop circles every summer. I find them to be a really, really bright group. And again, you've got, you know, the people that are really the light workers, really there to love it. Then you've got all the other people that are there to debunk it, and the infiltrators that want to make us uncomfortable or whatever. I don't go into the drama. I don't talk to a lot of people. My experience in the crop circles is not about proving anything to anyone. I'm kind of selfish. When I go, even if I'm with someone, I say, I'll talk to you when we come out. It's a really wonderful ascension tool to take yourself to any kind of a sacred site and go quietly. So in the crop circles, when I get there, it is so astounding just walking toward the formation, because if you're sensitive, your whole body lights up. When you get to the opening of the formation, it is so breathtaking, because you're walking through a line of wheat and you're walking down a small, thin line where the tractor drives. So it's like a tractor track, and we call them tram lines. And when you are on the ground, you really don't know where the crop circles are. You have to have somebody whisper to you in the morning, or somebody that was in it or flying over it knows that. You go to the gate. You climb over near the big rock, and then you count five tram lines to the right and just keep going. These are the kind of directions we get to find a crop circle. You know, unless you're lucky enough to have somebody flying over with a GPS, and then they can guide you in. But basically, you're walking through a flat field of wheat, and you can't see where it drops because the field is lower. So, you know, you can't see. You're looking at a long horizon of wheat. So, you know, part of the art is finding your way to get to the formations, but once you get close, you can really feel them. And when you're in them, it is the most strangely transcendental experience. Every time I go in, it's autopilot. I go straight to the center, I lay down, I close my eyes, and when I come out of whatever time it takes, I feel a total change in my entire system. We call it a recalibration, but sometimes you almost get like a whole body shake. But it's like you're tripping. It's like you're shaking and buzzing. And then strange things happen in your life where you are more telepathic. You know, I didn't plan to make movies. It was not a thought I ever had in my life. I have no training. I had no interest. I had no studies. And no desire. And I laid in a crop circle, and 6 months later, I made a crop circle movie. And 6 months later, I made a movie about UFOs. And every 6 months, I've made a full-feature film pretty much on my own. And I know that I'm being worked, because this is not information that I really had. But I get put in the right place at the right time, and everybody says yes. Probably because I smile a lot and I don't have an attitude. But
yeah.
The 2012 information that I got from the people in the crop circles in 2008 really told a nice story. I even spoke with Ian Crane. And Ian Crane is one of the biggest conspiracy guys in Europe. Do you know Ian?
No, I don't. I haven't had the pleasure of meeting him.
Well, he opened the Glastonbury Symposium. And I mean, people were walking out. People were gripping their seat. He had the most intense video of what's happening on the planet today. And so many people really don't want to see it. So it was really bold and intense. And then, of course, after he spoke, I was like completely shook, but I was very affected because he knows so much about what's going on. Sure enough, there he is, placed right in front of me. There I am, standing with my camera around my neck. And I asked him, I said, can you give it to me sweetly? So I took him out in the Glastonbury Abbey Gardens, which is this really sacred zone, put him on a bench, and he profoundly said, the script is still being written. I love that line. Because I think it really has a lot to say about what's coming for 2012. Now, we've got this huge world right now, and we've got all these prophecies. We've got the I Ching. We've got the Mayan elders. And we've got all kinds of elders and all kinds of different studies of life that are saying we are nearing the end of the world. What we really are hearing behind the veil is them saying we are nearing the end of the world as we know it. And this is something that really has to happen now, because as we know it, we're destroying the air, the earth, the ocean, the wildlife. We're destroying the planet. Humanity has taken it right to the edge of the tipping point. But the good news is the script is still being written. So my job as a light worker, and your job, is to get positive information out to the masses. How can we talk about 2012 in a positive way and get people to look at it as what it really is, which is an opportunity for humanity to evolve? And everybody's feeling it now. You know, not only the financial pinch and all these wars and everything going on, but people are feeling they're evolving. Even people that have no idea what's going on in their lives, I think, and this is, again, just my perception, that overall humanity is evolving. And I think that the ETs that are all around this planet now have something to do with it, because they are downloading information to open channels. They are also, most likely, breeding with a lot of people, upgrading humans. You know, we look at the different waves of the children that we've been talking about coming onto the planet. I don't know what age you are. I'm from the baby boomer zone. And my kids are in the indigo children zone, or waves. They're talking about waves. And when the indigos came in 18 to 25 years ago, this was really an encouraging step, because we had a lot of really brilliant spiritual children. We had two-year-old Buddhas. Not one, two, three, four, but they were really showing up in different places on the planet. Well, now their children are the crystal children, the third wave they're talking about. And these children have these bright eyes and so much insight and wisdom that we've got children that are teaching masses of adults, because these children come in fully evolved. So if we are having more and more of these upgraded humans, which possibly has something to do with ET interaction upgrading, well, I think we're doing things in the right direction.
Yeah, I agree. I've always felt, I love this one saying, they said the best prophets are the ones whose prophecies don't come true. And it's because they've reached enough people. And sometimes people need, you know, the good cop, bad cop. They need the shake-up the wake up or the shake up call. They need to see where they're going and what they're doing and the consequences of that. And but behind that, they need to say, okay, now there's a better way, and to be giving solutions, not just, you know, the dire predictions or whatever. And you know, it's very obvious. You know, I believe very strongly in the Hopi prophecies, where there are going to be two worlds, and one group will live in harmony with each other in the earth, and be going with this flow or this huge evolutionary wave that's coming in, that's exponential and getting bigger. And there's one group that's going to take the downward spiral and just take the greed and the corruption and the concept of separation to its climax, you know, ending in that program. The downward spiral just eventually collapses. So, you know, that's just my belief, and I always say there's a lion belief, you know. But it does seem to be going in that direction. We are seeing one group just getting greedier and more controlling and more dominating and just becoming psychopathic in that direction. And, you know, other people just figuring it out and seeing, and they're playing a perfect role because other people are seeing it going, oh, my God, you know, I can't support this anymore. I can't be a part of this. And they're pulling out and creating a whole different reality or going in a different flow, you might say.
Right, right. Well, and again, you know, we have to look at where we put our minds every day, because our thoughts, words, actions are going to create our reality and our lives. And mm-hmm. I think my favorite line of my 2012 movie was when Patricia Corey says, yeah, we're in martial law, but look at this day. Look at this beautiful day. What are you going to do with it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, to me, that is one pile of really an interesting sentence of saying, yeah, we are fully challenged, but let's enjoy life anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So when I have my brain and I know all this stuff that may or may not be true, all the conspiracy theories, which I'm not going to mention because that is not something where I want my work to go, or mm-hmm. it's not information that I want to put out to the world. My information that I want to put out to the world are these beautiful movies. And mm-hmm. what I believe about the crop circles, which are in all four of my films, is that they are the first physical manifestation of communications from other realms that humans can actually see. So mm-hmm. what we have is the first communication form that the ETs are giving humanity. That it's such a simple, beautiful, raw communication skill. It is silent. Mm-hmm. It is all languages. It is effortless, because what they say is that the crop circles are offering this sacred geometric patterns that give us subconscious, subliminal information. So it's downloading, just by looking at a picture of a crop circle, it downloads information into the minds of all people looking at it. So now, well, there's a brilliant way to get humanity to evolve. Mm-hmm. Give us these symbols that we don't even realize by looking, oh, what a pretty piece of art, that all of a sudden you know something that you didn't know mm-hmm. a minute ago.
Yeah,
so if we start putting them up, yeah. So if we can start putting them up in hospitals, in schools, in kindergartens, beautiful crop circle photos, well, wouldn't that be a great move?
Yeah, I have one on my conference floor, actually, in the conference building. I have the beautiful one with all the, look like doves in it or whatever. They're all in a mm-hmm. in a row. And we actually nice. Painted that on the floor in the conference building.
Ooh. Well, I mean, they're so magnificent. And uh-huh. there are so many beautiful, beautiful pictures. I want to mention, while we've got a few more minutes, that my movie trailers, if anybody mm-hmm. wants to check out my site, is www.pattygreer.com, PattyGreer.com. And I also want to mention that the greatest website, if people want to look at photos of crop circles, like the entire archive since the 1980s, you can go to the CropCircleConnector.com. Fabulous site. And for like $15 or $20, you join as a member, then you can go into the archives. I mean, every day, all summer long, they are the people that we would find out first thing in the morning what happened while we slept. You know, when
yeah,
you're over there,
They have to pay for the planes and the upkeep and the sites and the cameras and everything else. So why not sponsor them?
Well, yeah, but actually they're not the people that are taking all the pictures. We are.
Uh-huh.
I didn't even know my first 2 years that the Crop Circle Connector would take, you know, the photos I sent. You have to send them really good photos. They have to be photos that they don't have yet. But I was kind of an animal with flying. I would fly on the days when it was rainy and windy and no doors on. I mean, these little microlights are ridiculous to fly in. But, you know, when there's so many formations, you can't resist. Mm-hmm. And I would fly to the obscure ones that might take a little bit more time that a lot of people didn't fly to. So I started getting in the Crop Circle Connector with my photos. Mm-hmm. And but I highly recommend it, you know, that if people are interested in seeing photos of the crop circles, my website has 4 trailers filled with them, and you can be taken through the formation. You walk through them, you fly over them. Mm-hmm. But the Crop Circle Connector has so many, I mean, hundreds of them. It's absolutely phenomenal.
Now, how are you doing with this? I know you're doing a film on fairies. We actually have photographed fairies here, and I had a woman psychologist here named Lauren, and this fairy flew right in her face and just sat there fluttering for a while and then took off, and there was a guy with her, too. And both of them are very solid, and she said, you know, I can't even tell you what I just saw as a psychologist. She said, you know, I've committed people for things like this. And, you know, it's amazing because we're living in a vortex here, the veils between worlds are very thin, and we've got the nature kingdom doing its thing, we've got the ETs doing their things, masters appearing, and getting it all on film. We actually filmed Kuan Yin actually appearing in the field to a monk that was here. But pretty amazing photographs. But the I'm really interested in your film about fairies. How's that going?
Well, I have to be honest, I got about $6,000 or $8,000 in and I just stopped. I have made 4 movies out of my savings account.
Mm-hmm.
I do all the work myself and I just all of a sudden went cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I pulled the plug on the fairy film, which is not permanent, but I kind of wore myself out. I've made 4 movies in 3 years and I've almost made the 5th. I think I just got tired, but the fairy film, I was on such a roll, and it's going to be magnificent. It's going to be lots of special effects, and I would love to get some financing for my films, you know, but it hasn't happened yet, and it's been a harsh education coming into this business not knowing anything. I've had extensive lessons, is a polite way to put it, with people in the industry that don't want to see people like me succeed. So
I've experienced that one as well, being an author and then, you know, done other movies and things like that. But, you know, we have the movie Contact Has Begun, and that just went ballistic. It's Netflix picked it up, and it's gone crazy. But the two is, you know, Contact 2 has been on the books for quite a long time, and just the money's not there. The you know, and again, like you're saying, some very strong lessons were learned in that one.
Well, I had actually a movie just walk away last year. I filmed something really, really heavy, and I can't say any names because they're hoping to sue me for slander further, but I let some people join me on the team, and they just took the entire film and my money, and I went into quite a bit of shock. I was stunned. But again, I'm looking at today, what is my life? Who am I working with? I think that what I filmed was too heavy. I know that I'm supposed to be the female filmmaker who only brings these really beautiful images to the surface, and what I had filmed was a really heavy thing on abductees.
Mm-hmm.
And I had 24 hours solid of the most intense interviews I've ever listened to. For me, I find the information fascinating. What I got after I finally stopped whining about, I can't believe people would just take this from me, you know, how can people be so blah, blah, blah. But what I learned is my life is working in perfect divine order.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not a movie maker pro. I'm not brilliant this way, but I'm putting out movies that are winning Best Feature Film Award. So something of a higher dimension is definitely working with me to create these movies. The fact that I did this amazing thing that was just too heavy, that I shouldn't be putting out because it's not who I am supposed to be in the mm-hmm. world, it disappeared. I mean, it just, and the way they got away with it was so phenomenal that I went, this is in perfect divine order.
Yeah.
I mean, it hurt. It
uh-huh.
hurt, you know, but
yeah.
What are you going to do? So the fairy
show. I try to stay clear that whole scenario there because I've known that there is a real push right now to create a very dark picture and, you know, and I've known about the abduction scenario for years and years and years, and I really don't say to, you know, I will address it if somebody asks me a question about it or whatever, but I don't put my energies there because, you know, it's a very small piece of the puzzle compared to the big picture, and the benevolent side of things is just so incredible, and it's just not being addressed properly because the fear and the sensation and all the other negative stuff, and that's why I've had exceptions with certain groups, you know, certain major UFO groups that whenever I tried to bring a higher perspective on this thing and bring out the more benevolent side of it, you know, there was major censorship involved and they just kept pushing this dark agenda. So anyway, we were talking earlier about that. That's one of the reasons why I've been kind of blackballed out of certain groups because I don't want to push the negative agenda, so they kind of pulled the plug on me speaking at certain events or being on certain radio shows and things of that nature.
Well, and again, how perfect is that? You know, we
yeah.
don't resonate there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting good with the fact that I don't resonate in a lot of circles. I don't want to anymore.
No.
And I'm finding yeah. that I've created a new life. You know, I have
mm-hmm.
moved my life to a place where I feel that I'm welcoming the ascension process.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to the all the prophecies about 2012 and what is coming now, yes, we are being challenged as a human race. Yes, we are being dosed with all kinds of things that are not within our control. But the thing that is within our control, each person, one person at a time, can really change our attitude. Simple things like walking down the street, plaster a smile on your face.
Mm-hmm.
It is the strangest thing, the reaction that you'll get. But if we can start, you know, putting out an energy that lights people up, that changes their feeling for the day, we can also go out and talk about all the scary stuff and change their feeling and ours for the day. But making really conscious choices with first thing in the morning, what can I do to make a difference?
Mm-hmm.
What can I do to keep my light on? No matter how challenging my life is. You know, I mean, I think we're going to definitely see a lot of social unrest. Again, not something I want to focus on, but something that I want to be ready for if it happens.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than being fearful to take these possible scenarios and say, how can I be prepared? Well, you know, a bunch of seeds and nuts and food storage, you know, in case there is some kind of a social
mm-hmm.
trauma. It'd be really smart to have all kinds of packaged foods and a water purifier and, you know, stock up on certain things, not because we're scared, but because we just want to be prepared.
I agree.
You know, there's
you
different
know,
ways to look. Yeah.
Yeah, we're running out of time here. We're at the end of the hour. So, you know, we could probably do a whole nother show on 2012, which maybe we can schedule that later. But can you give your website out one more time so people can get a hold of your videos?
Yes, it's http www.pattygreer.com, PattyGreer.com. And you can find my website, no problem. I'm also on Amazon.com. You can just search Patty Greer Movies,
mm-hmm.
and I have four available.
Great. Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on this show. You know, it falls under that praise Allah, tie your camel, and when you are prepared, there's nothing to fear, you know. So, you know, to me, it's just pay attention and love yourself enough to do what's necessary.
That's right. And keep your eyes to the skies because I think we've got an awful lot coming in now. And, you know, those of us that are awake, there is so much to see. And I think
I agree.
A lot of people are seeing a lot.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, and we'll have to do it again real soon.
Thank you very much.
All right, we're signing off. This is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great evening, and definitely watch the skies. It's real busy. It's definitely busy over the sanctuary here. We're seeing incredible ships. So keep an eye on the skies and have a good evening. Good night.
Good night.